This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us online at www.tsn1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for this Saturday morning, the 16th of August. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. 2 hours of hockey talk for you. As much hockey as there is to talk about, which isn't a lot right now in the dog days of summer, but we'll get 2 hours for you. No problem. Coming up on the show tonight, today, Chris Daniels, King 5 news reporter in Seattle. He's been on top of the NHL to Seattle story from the get-go. He's going to join us in the second hour to talk about that. We have some other topics that normally, I'll be honest, might not get as much play during the regular season or during a time period when there's a lot of hockey news going on, but it is quiet in the NHL world, so there is some additional stories that we're going to talk about, bring you some sort of interesting and new stories here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show this morning. And before that, of course, I say a good morning to my colleagues, Richard and Ezra.
Drew, a belated happy birthday to you.
Thank you. Much appreciated.
62.
Yeah, 62. A solid 62.
Yeah, very nice.
Yeah, it was very good.
You were out of town for your birthday.
I was.
How was the golf? You were at the PGA Championship.
I was at the PGA Championship. Actually, let me start there. I'll talk about the golf. I have a bone to pick with Mr. Ginsberg.
Oh, why? No birthday wish?
No, he sent me a birthday wish. He was okay on that front.
Kay. I think I was one of the first people to give you a birthday wish. I actually gave you a birthday wish on Twitter and I texted you.
Yeah, wow. But the problem I have with you is actually Twitter related. So Monday, after the PGA Championship, Remus sends me a message and says, can you come on with Haas to talk about the tournament? I say, sure, no problem. So Remus tweets it out. Joining us now is going to be at IC Drew to talk about the PGA Championship.
See, I'm not on Twitter, so this will be new to me. Yeah. What happened?
On the Super Lube warm-up, at Hustle Rama. Okay, great, no problem. This guy, my supposed good friend Ezra Ginsberg, responds to everybody with the word, seriously? As in, that's what you're putting on, is Drew? Coming from the guy, I believe, who was on air to discuss a chicken wing eating contest at one point in time.
At which he did not succeed at all.
Did not succeed at all. I mean, at least I was there at the PGA Championship, doing the 1290 family proud, good seats, got to see
where'd
the
you
final.
Sit? Because when you sit, you have to sit basically the whole time.
Which is what happened. On the Saturday, we sat for a while on the 7th fairway, which is a par 5, and we could see the tee shots and then the approach shots and then the putts. And then as all the final groups came through there, we ran to the 18th green. We had a good spot on the 18th green on Saturday. Terrific. Sunday was when the rain delay happened. We walked off the shuttle bus that you take to get to the course. And it just came down in sheets. It was monsoon-like rain at that point in time. That's I don't know if you happened to see it on the television.
I watched the Jays game and then I turned over to watch the last two holes.
Sure. Okay. But yeah, because the Jays game, was that 19-inning game. Right. So absolutely get drenched, soaked head to toe, the entire course. They had unseasonable amounts of rain in Louisville that last week. So everything that wasn't the course itself was pretty wet, but everything else around it, the grandstands and the seating area for the fans, really just turned into a mud pit almost. So Sunday, after the rain delay finally lets up and we sort of dry off as best we can, which wasn't a lot because we're absolutely drenched, we ran back to the 18th green. We had great seats right at the 18th green for the conclusion of the event. Really,
how dark was it?
It was. I was directly across the big, the big scoreboard, the size, I can't describe how big, manual, sure. Big old scoreboard. I couldn't see it.
Okay, well.
So, I mean, if Rory, when Rory McIlroy put his second shot into the bunker, if he had said at that point in time, I can't see.
You wouldn't have come back the next day, though.
I doubt
it. For one bunker shot.
Yeah, I mean, I doubt it because, he did have enough of a lead that it was unlikely he was going to bogey the hole at that point in time. So I doubt I would have come back. If there'd been a playoff, I would have come back because it's a three-hole playoff at the very least. And we didn't really, we had plans for the Monday in Kentucky, but they could have easily been changed. They were shopping related, so that's not a big deal.
All right, Drew, let's get going.
So anyways, if he had said that I can't see, I need to come back, people would have been upset. But I think they would have also understood because it was that dark. So anyways, Ezra, I might not talk to you for the rest of the show.
No, in all honesty, I was I was always joking. If anybody follows me on Twitter, they know that I'm rarely serious. But
or they listen to the show.
I think you were awesome on the warm up as always. Yeah, but I thought it was really cool that you guys got to experience that, because I'm admittedly not a huge golf fan as far as watching golf goes. I like to play golf, but as of late, it's not really my favorite televised sport. But the PGA Championship this year, with all of the circumstances we were talking about with the weather and Rory McIlroy winning another major, it was awesome for you and Laura to be a part of that, because I think you guys would agree golf is kind of needing some more storylines.
What are you, David Faraday? Let's get going here.
Let's start with Alex Burmistrov. It came out yesterday, sort of, and really we were quite thankful because it gave us a little bit more content for today's show. Igor Arenko, who's a reporter in Russia, tweeted that Alex Burmistrov was speaking to prosports.ru, which is a Russian sports newspaper or website. And the quote is, "I will almost certainly return to the NHL. Next summer will be defining." Now, that certainly is of interest to Winnipeg Jets fans, because the Jets hold his rights, given that they made him a qualifying offer before he went over to the KHL. So the Jets do hold his rights, and there's really four options if he decides to come back to North America and play in the NHL. The first one is he comes back and signs a contract with the Jets. Second one is he signs a contract with the Jets and then the Jets trade him. Or that he,
or that they just trade him, or that they sign the contract with somebody else, and the Jets have the option to match it or get the compensation commensurate with what it is in the CBA.
Exactly right. Those are the four options. Do you expect Alex Burmistrov is going to be, if he stays true to his word, as he said here to Igor Arenko, and he comes back to the NHL, do you expect that it's going to be with the Winnipeg Jets?
No, I don't. Drew, you look at the Jets as they're currently constructed. Brian Little's on contract for another 4 years. Mark Scheifele's here for the long haul, and Perreault's here for 3 years. Minimum. So is Burmistrov going to be your fourth line center? Well, yeah, maybe you could ease him in, but he's not going to come back to play fourth line center, so off the table. You don't even know if he'll come back to play the third line center. And even if he would, he's not an upgrade. He's not as good as Perreault or Scheifele or Little. I mean, you could say, him and Perreault could battle it out, but I mean, Perreault's going to be a little more established right now, and for a team that says it wants to make the playoffs, although the roster wouldn't indicate that it actually does, or it's a realistic shot of doing it, in my opinion. I just don't see it happening. So I think he's going to want a better opportunity that won't be available here in Winnipeg, and it's going to be somewhere else. And I think the team's probably tired of his, comments and this and that, just picking and choosing. I don't really care if Paul Maurice is here and has a history of coaching one season in the KHL. I don't think that's a difference maker. I mean, I very well could be wrong, but I just don't see this relationship, I don't see this relationship being fixed at all. I see him going somewhere else, probably for a second or third round pick, and on a draft day kind of deal, and then you move on.
Yeah, and I think, a lot was made of Paul Maurice and maybe him having a bit of a sway in bringing Alexander Burmistrov here. But I think, this comment that we heard, I believe it was yesterday or a couple days ago, is obviously going to get Jets fans excited, because it was pretty much looking like Alexander Burmistrov was going to play the rest of his career in Russia, even though he's very young, still in his early 20s. But, Richie makes a really good point there. We're going to talk about Kevin Hayes later. Kevin Hayes is the new Justin Schultz as far as, being a UFA out of college, in the sense that he hasn't played in the NHL. So it's a situation where, and, just let me clarify that. What I mean is, it's believed one of the big reasons why Kevin Hayes isn't signing with the Chicago Blackhawks is because he's looking at the right side and he's not seen any opportunity. So he's looking at it and saying, well, I'm not going to have any opportunity to play behind Marian Hossa.
Kevin Hayes was a draft pick of the Chicago Blackhawks first a number of pick. Years ago. First round pick, 24th overall.
2010.
2010. He did not sign with the Blackhawks, and as of this morning, he is now an unrestricted free agent.
Yeah, the Hawks announced last night that they would not be signing. They said they offered him a fair contract, and he wants to do what Jason Gregoire and other players have done and just opt out and not sign and then be able to be an unrestricted free agent, and we'll talk about where he's going to go probably later.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later in the show, but that's just sort of a recap of who Kevin Hayes is. Yeah.
And that's what it comes down to, Richie. Alexander Burmistrov is as far as we're concerned, making good enough money in Russia and liking playing in Russia as opposed to coming back and playing here. And we don't know what the relationship would be like between Alexander Burmistrov and True North. Is he even welcome back? And
well,
I think that's right.
Yeah, that's the question. I don't think he really is unless he comes back on a cheap one-year deal to prove himself and is willing to do anything he can to help the team. I don't think that's going to happen. See, I think like the Jets' circumstances for bringing him back do not match up with what Bermistroff's circumstances would be for bringing him back. That's why I just don't see it working. You can cite all you want about an asset, do all that stuff. That's fine. But this is real life. It's not a game. You can't just trade him over on NHL 2014 and have him in your lineup. He's complained last time about playing behind Olli Jokinen. And you can say what you want about Olli Jokinen. Now, you guys know I certainly wasn't his biggest fan.
Mm-hmm.
But in a locker room, there's a leadership structure and a veteran, and veterans get the benefit of the doubt. That's how it works in really every workplace. So you can work hard, shut up, and get to where you want to go, or you can whine about it after a year or two. Never mind the fact that he wasn't exactly tearing it up offensively.
No, he was a healthy scratch during the lockout year. And as far as he was concerned, I think Bristrov is a very interesting case, but I don't believe he factors in to the short-term or long-term plans of the Jets. And I think we spoke about this quite a bit when he decided to go to the KHL. Bermistrov has the ability, I think, to be kind of a two-way center, and he has a certain amount of offensive ability. He's a guy that has good possession numbers and all that. I know the advanced stats crowd would love to talk about Bermistrov's numbers, and I'm not being sarcastic. I mean, Bermistrov has a certain skill set, but the problem is, you know, the mental aspect wasn't there, and let's be honest, he wasn't liking his role on the team, and at this point in time. Again, I think comments like these, Drew, will get fans excited because they'll say, okay, well, maybe Bermistrov will come back next year. He'll play one more year in the KHL, and then he'll come back. But that assumes that the Jets want him back. And I don't know the answer to that. I just don't have the answer to that.
And if he were to do things the Jets way, which would be speaking to them directly, we wouldn't even have any idea about this.
Sure.
But there's no communication there, or at least I don't think it's good communication.
Between the Bermistrov and the Jets.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming that, of course, but the Jets don't exactly do things in public. They're pretty private, and he seems to just kind of say what he wants. And I realize that he's not, you know, that they own his rights, but he's not playing for them, and he can say what he wants. But my point is, if they were on the same page, well, he probably wouldn't be there. But if he is there and they are on the same page,
I don't think
he'd be talking to the media or having people media leak stories.
You know, you mentioned the center position, and I agree. There's not really a spot for Bermistrov. Ideally, you don't want him even for a significant amount of time in 1 year playing your fourth-line center role.
I mean, it's better than what they have now, with all due respect to Slater in terms of talent level, but Slater is under contract, and doesn't mean he couldn't play wing and take some face-offs.
Exactly.
That's a young guy in face-offs.
That's what my point was going to be, that you know he has versatility that he could play a wing position. So it's not like Bermistrov wouldn't add an element to the Jets that they're lacking. I'm skeptical that that's going to – I don't want to get people's hopes up that he's coming back anytime soon.
And also, you know, what is he? I mean, people can cite all they want about this and that, his stats. And I mean, what is he? Is he really that good?
I don't think.
He's probably a 40 to 45 point guy in a good year right now. In a good, really good year with a good opportunity with 15 minutes a night, probably at most 40 to 45 points. So let's calm down.
He had 37 points in the KHL last year with Kazan.
And I realize they take stats differently and all that stuff. But what was his role there last year? He was asked to score. I mean, nobody's watching the KHL games. You can cite his stats all you want. Bigger ice. Less physical, different style of play, different line mates, different competition. Okay? So everybody can talk to me about how well Alexander Bermistrov is playing there, and I bet you they've watched none of his games there. So I'm not convinced.
Another player that has been talked about, this is our buddy Ken Wiebe of the Winnipeg Sun, tweeted this earlier. That's where I saw it. I saw it yesterday on Twitter. He said that the Winnipeg Jets have offered Jordan Tootoo a one-year, two-way contract. And that Jordan Tootoo turned it down, saying, you know, for whatever reason he had, is he's obviously an unrestricted free agent, having been bought out by the Detroit Red Wings. My question for you guys is this. You know, looking at the Jets roster and looking at the Jets situation, and, I mean, they're not up against the salary cap. They don't have any problems there. If you think that Jordan Tootoo is worthy of a two-way contract offer, why not just offer him a one-way deal and see?
They got 14 guys under contract right now, Drew. 14 forwards.
Right.
And 8 defensemen. So
it's just a numbers game. Just a numbers game at that point?
Yeah. It's a numbers game.
It's a numbers game, and hey, I love Jordan Tootoo. He's actually got a book coming out pretty soon. You can look forward to that. Jordan Tootoo is a guy that he's lost a step in the last couple years. But I think absolutely he could add. I think the Jets are lacking a little bit of physicality.
I agree with
bottom
that.
Line. I think that's why I like Chris Thorburn on the team. And obviously, you know, with Jordan Tutu coming on, he's going to be a fourth line guy. And it didn't work out with the Red Wings, obviously being bought out. But he also wasn't getting the playing time. And he's had some injuries. And, you know, at this point in his career, he's wearing down a little bit. And obviously, he's waiting for a one-way contract, guys. I mean, I think he would have no problem, you know, playing one or two more years in Winnipeg. But I think absolutely to kind of replace a Tanner Glass type of role who signed in New York after playing in Pittsburgh last year. But I think Jordan Tutu, like, at this point, you know, they're offering him an opportunity. And I would say the main reason why is he's probably hoping that someone will give him a one-way deal.
Probably, and we'll see, you know, if he eventually takes this offer, because it's apparently, I don't know if it's going to be sitting there on the table. Just to clarify in terms of the numbers, the NHL have 23-man rosters. The Jets have 14 forwards under contract. One of them is Matt Halaschuk on a two-way deal. But they have eight.
TJ Gagliardi also.
Sorry, TJ Gagliardi also, but they have eight defensemen on one-way deals. And then they have two goaltenders.
Keaton Ellerbee's on two-way
deals. Yeah, Keaton Ellerbee's on two-way deals.
So then you could add him conceivably, but you can't have all these guys on. I mean, you can have all these guys on two-way deals go to the AHL. I guess that's possible.
That was my thinking, is that, you know, if, you know, at this point, if you think he's worthy of, if you think he can do something for you, and you know, if you offer him a one-way deal and you know, he doesn't make your team and you have to send him down and he clears waivers, I mean, look, how much money are we really talking about? It's not going to break anybody's balance book, you know, with what you're going to offer Jordan Tutu on a one-year, one-way contract if he has to play for that money in St. John's.
Well, yeah, so, I mean, I stand corrected, by the way. You guys are absolutely right in terms of Halaschuk, Gagliardi and Ellerby all being on two-way deals. Now, Trouba and Shifley, too, but they're not going anywhere. Obviously, they're going to stay up.
Yeah.
Right? And Hutchinson, I think, is going to be the backup, so he's going to stay up.
Yeah.
So that leaves what? That leaves you with, before you have, you know, you have 14 guys under contract, but in reality, you have 12 guys on one-way deals. We're counting Shifley there. You have seven, and you have two guys. So it's 21. Mm-hmm. And you're assuming some of those guys on two-way deals are going to make the team. So if you won't sign a two-way deal and compete with those guys, then you have to give them a guaranteed contract. But you gave Chris Thorburn a guaranteed contract, and your right side is going to be Frolik, Wheeler, Byfuglien, and Thorburn. So can you give another guaranteed one-way deal to a guy who can't crack your top 12 unless he's playing out of position?
And I think, by the way, Richie, Jordan Tutu, there's a good chance you'll see him sign with another team. He played most of last year with Grand Rapids, and I think, you know, he's 31 years old, but the way he plays,
you think he'll get a one-way contract at this point, you know, the 16th of August, when I mean, well, any team could have had him for free, for, you know, not for free, but for,
he's not, yeah, as effective as he was.
I think I don't know 100%. I mean, I'm saying that I think there's a good chance that he signs with an NHL team, and I think that the indication is that he didn't accept the two-way deal from the Winnipeg Jets. I think there's always the chance that he doesn't sign. I mean, guys, the reality is, and as I said, you guys know that I love the rock'em sock'em hockey, but you're looking at players like Jordan Tutu. Paul Bissonnette hasn't signed yet. There's, yeah, rumors he might sign with Washington, but you're seeing that type of players of those ilk, are kind of having trouble finding jobs. It used to be the enforcer was phased out at maybe 34, 35, but Jordan Tutu, 31, I think he's still got a couple of years left in him at least. So that type of role, though, is diminishing. We've seen that across the NHL.
But the difference between Tutu and that role is that Tutu used to be able to play a bit. Like, he used, yep, to be able to give you, you know, some goals, 5 to 10 goals, a physicality, a hard work ethic, and he doesn't play with the same edge that he used to me when I watch him play. He doesn't play with that same edge all the time. Like, there's a period there in Nashville where he always played on the edge. Yep. I think he always succeeded when playing on the edge. Now I don't think he plays on the edge as much. And, I mean, it's tough to keep that up. It's a tough wear and tear. He's obviously had some, you know, he hasn't had the easiest road. Mm-hmm. And so I think that it would be nice to see him get that shot. And I wouldn't be shocked if he did accept it, if nothing else came about, as he said. But at this point in time, I would be surprised if a one-way deal did come along. As you guys mentioned, August 15th, August 16th, like, we're, what, a month from training camp here. The one-way deals, these guys are on vacation now, most of them. Like, yeah, the one-way deals would have got out of the way. Now it's just a matter of come to camp, compete for a spot. I think you saw Simon Gagné is going to be coming to compete
Boston,
for a spot,
yeah,
in Boston after not playing last year. Like, come to camp. Like, he didn't even get a two-way deal. That's an invitation, but that's the idea. Try and make the team. So for him, it'd be trying to beat out Halaschuk, trying to beat out Gagliardi. You know, different types of players, but maybe that's a good contrast. Maybe the Jets need a physical player. I just don't see how he fits in, but it wouldn't hurt if he came into camp and tried to compete for a spot. And again, it's creating competition, even if it's for a 13th forward spot. It's not the worst thing in the world.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we turn our attention to Detroit, where they made a big signing earlier this week. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning here on TSN 1290, online at TSN1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. This segment of the show is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, an essential part of your protective equipment is a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center 204-487-2226 or online at LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Gentlemen, the Detroit Red Wings gave themselves some peace of mind protection earlier this week when they signed Executive Vice President and General Manager Ken Holland to a 4-year contract extension that'll keep him with the organization through 2017-2018. You know, it seems like a no-brainer, you know, keeping Ken Holland around, given that I think in this room we would all agree he's among the top 5 executives in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
But my question to you guys, you know, in addition to, you know, talking about Ken Holland mm-hmm. and his impact on the Detroit Red Wings, what does it mean for Mike Babcock, head coach of the Red Wings, because his contract expires at the end of this season?
I don't think people are, I don't know if it's totally out there that there's a little bit of discord there in Detroit between Babcock and management and some decisions and what's going on, you know, for the next contract. So there is speculation that he's on his way out.
Right.
And where he goes, I've heard rumors of Toronto.
Sure.
I've heard rumors of Pittsburgh. Those are the two ones I've heard most of all. And that those jobs would come with some kind of a say in some form in terms of personnel. Similar to what you see with Patrick Waugh, in that he has a say in determining, you know, who comes in, who comes out, but he's not primarily responsible for general manager duties or player personnel duties.
And it's likely that Mike Babcock will get a guaranteed contract, unlike Patrick Waugh, who doesn't have a guaranteed contract in Colorado.
I don't think that's a concern of his.
Yeah, exactly.
So that is a big thing. Now, first off, you take care of Holland. Mike Ilitch has two great general managers running his two teams. You know, Dave Dombrowski running the Detroit Tigers and Kenny Holland running the Detroit Red Wings. I mean, Ken Holland is respectful. He's forthright. He lets guys do jobs. He had guys like Jim Neal there. He has salary cap experts in place. He has, I'm sure, analytics guys in place. Whether or not they publicize it, to me, stupidly, like other teams do. So Ken Holland is a no-brainer. You give him what he wants, and you let him stay as long as he wants. He's always on top of the game, and Detroit's going through a transition. But, you know, remember, this team, not last year, but the season prior, was all of a 3-1 lead up against the eventual Stanley Cup champion Chicago Blackhawks, was game 7 in round 2 overtime against the eventual Stanley Cup champion Chicago Blackhawks while being a team in transition and having guys coming through now like Thomas Tatar. You guys have seen Gustav Nyquist and the performance he had, Riley Sheahan and a bunch of other players out there, Danny DeKeyser, who's yet to sign, but Kenny Holland thinks he will get that done eventually. So Ken Holland's done a nice job rebuilding this team on the fly and just continuing to develop. There's nothing about him I really can criticize. I mean, you can maybe take issue with the long-term deals and how they're affecting the team now in terms of some cap space and the age and the injuries that they're facing. But at the end of the day, he's a top-notch general manager and by all accounts, a top-notch human being. So he's a slam dunk to bring back. Babcock and him, and it's interesting because Ken Holland, as I'll let you get in here in a second, but we've had Ken Holland on the show before.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things we asked him is, you know, How did you deal with, you know, Mike Babcock coming in? Maybe you want to play a different style than you want to play, because people don't necessarily remember Mike Babcock coached, you know, for Team Canada, I believe it was, but it was coached for Anaheim. Did a great job. Took him to the 2003 Cup final, and they lost to Jersey in 7 games. But that was a different kind of team. You know, I think that Steve Thomas and you know, they had Korea, but there was a rugged team, right? And a team
Adam Oates was on that team.
Yeah, but a team that was going to be kind of, you know, close games, play tough defense.
Was that 07? Anyways.
Oates was on one of those teams. That was 03. But anyhow, the point is, he wanted to play an up-and-down style. And Ken Holland talked to him about playing a little more of an east-west style. So they've worked really well together in terms of success. But it appears now that there's a little bit of a discord. Some of the comments Mike Babcock makes after games, you'll have to ask certain people. And Babcock, is, you know, might want a new challenge. If you read some of his comments about the contract, you know, if I think he says, if I'm not wanted here, you know, I'll find work elsewhere. That you know, not putting words in his mouth, but that was the idea of his comments. So that will be very interesting to watch this year. And I think Detroit's success may be determinative here, because if Detroit succeeds to such an extent, and we don't know if they will, they didn't reach expectations last year, but if they do, I mean, there's going to put pressure on the market to bring him back. And never mind the fact that I've said in this show, and I believe that he's the best coach in the National Hockey League. So I find it interesting that what I believe to be one of the best general managers and what I believe to be one of the best coaches don't get along. Or not saying they don't get along, but there may be some issue there. Maybe.
Sure.
And interesting to see the way it goes. Remember, Detroit's would not let, another thing to point out, there's a lot of factors here that go on. Detroit would not let their AHL coach out of his contract to discuss with other teams. Now, Mike Babcock's assistant was able to go to Carolina and get a job. But their AHL coach, and I'm forgetting his name right now at the top of my head, was not able to interview for NHL head coaching positions, and they re-upped him. So a lot of people think that was done with the idea that Babcock...
Jeff Blashill,
and that the idea that Babcock would eventually possibly be replaced by him if they weren't able to work something out.
And I think I think what goes with that, Richie, is to know that you have him there if that happens. So I think there's also just having him kind of as a backup plan.
Security blanket.
Not a backup plan. You're right.
More of a
security blanket.
He's done a nice job with developing the young players, too. So they, you know, it's one of those things like John Cooper in Tampa Bay, right, Ezzy? You coach all these guys, Tyler Johnson, all these guys. You know what you got, and you grow up with them. Similar idea there. Yeah, Tatar and Gustav Nyquist and all those guys.
Yeah, and Riley Sheahan. You mentioned a lot of these players, Glenn Denning. Mm-hmm. I, to be honest with you guys, the season that the Red Wings had, I was surprised that they made the playoffs. And that Eastern Conference was a mess for most of last year. But when you look at all of the, you know, the 23 years, how many times they've made the playoffs, I think it's just once that they've missed the playoffs. And you know, Holland has more regular season wins than any other GM in his 16 years there. You know, I think Richie's touched on a really good point about Babcock. I would find it really hard to argue with Holland being the best GM and Babcock being the best coach, in the sense that there's so much success there. You know, they haven't won a Stanley Cup in a little while, obviously dating back to 2008. But they're still set up nicely, and I love they got to steal Anthony Mantha 20th overall last year, and I think they're still very well set up.
I think all you need to know about the Detroit Red Wings is that we're surprised that they haven't won a cup since 2008.
Right. Well, and you know, is Alfredson going to come back? I think, you know, it's really up to him. I don't think that's a big deal. I know that, you know, a lot has been made about Danny DeKeyser as a free agent, and I think, you know, he factors in. He's been really good coming out as an undrafted guy out of college, and they'll sign him. I don't see there being a major problem with signing DeKeyser. But I think Richie has touched on a really good point as far as Mike Babcock goes. Mike Babcock will have no problems finding another head coaching job. And really, I think if you look at it, and Ken Holland, Richie's obviously saying all the right things and saying that, you know, the next thing is to get Mike Babcock signed. But I think it really has to do with, you know, you mentioned challenges. And, you know, Mike Babcock's won the Olympic gold medals. He's won Stanley Cups.
Yeah.
So maybe he's looking at this and he's looking at the team. And
absolutely.
I don't think it's just...
Absolutely.
I think the Red Wings can definitely, with adding a few players... I know they went after Dan Boyle, and there's been rumors that Mike Green might be somebody who they're going after. Mm-hmm. I think the Red Wings aren't that many players away from being a contending team in the East. I agree.
Well, especially in the East. But it's interesting. I mean, one of the things that Mike Babcock has been apparently... he asked Ken Holland for during this offseason that hasn't yet come to fruition is a right-shooting defenseman. And that's where there's been a lot of connections made between the Boston Bruins and the Detroit Red Wings.
Yep.
So the Bruins have that glut of defensemen, and the Red Wings need a right shooting defenseman. That's what Babcock is. You know, if he went to his GM and said, "This is my wish list for the offseason," one of the higher items on that list is a right shooting defenseman.
Well, they're all lefties on their back end. Eh? That's the deal.
Right.
Yeah.
And so he's saying that he wants somebody.
And if you watch 24/7, we can, you know, refer back to specific moments here. If you watch, and this has been an issue, Detroit's had left guys for a long time. But when you watch 24/7, what does Randy Carlyle say to do in the offense on the forecheck? He says to fire it around the boards because they got two left-handed guys and one's gonna have to pick it off on the wrong side. Mm-hmm. And so these are things. And if you and let's continue with this, Mike Babcock very adamant in the Olympics about 3-3, 3-3 meaning three left-handed guys with three right-handed guys.
I thought he wanted the guys with the highest Corsis.
So that was a big thing for him, right?
Behave yourself.
Yeah, that was a big thing for him in terms of putting the team together. But now Ken Holland doesn't work in a vacuum. He can't acquire Mike Green if the price is Thomas Yurko. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, if he doesn't think Mike Green's had some off-ice issues. He's terrible in his own zone, and he's had injury problems. It doesn't mean that he's not a talented player and wouldn't succeed in this you know, puck possession style that they play. Although I think every team wants to play a puck possession style, so I think that's overused. But the idea is, you know, they're an offensive team. They use skating. They're not the most physical. Sure, he would help. But you're not going to give away everything for him, and he's got a big ticket, and it's only for 1 year, so you can't mortgage it. So Ken Holland has to balance the future and the future in the now. And Mike Babcock's a coach. He's got to worry about the now. And Mike Babcock is interesting in that. And a lot of players don't like him. Just put that out there.
Sure.
You hear that a lot, too. But I like him and his comments. I don't care. You know, my job is to make the player the best he can be and the team the best they can be. And if they don't like him, let's be honest. You talked to a lot of people. Scotty Bowman wasn't very well liked. Do you get the job done? So I like the fact that Babcock doesn't care about that. We're talking about some big guys that he coached over the years. Didn't really like him. But they still performed.
Yeah.
And I think that that's, at the end of the day, do they respect him? It's not do they like him, it's do they respect
Certain
him.
Certain coaches can get away with that when it's clear that they're at the top of their craft. Mm-hmm. Mike Babcock at the top of his craft.
Yep.
Scotty Bowman at the top of his craft. If you're a middling head coach who's a jerk and who your players don't like, it's not going to work for you.
Yeah, the word properly, you're absolutely right. Really, that the argument becomes, or I guess the discussion becomes, is that the coach's responsibility for the players to like the coach? Do the players want a coach they like, or do they want to win? I think they'd probably choose winning, and all Babcock does is win. And I think it's very interesting. I know we've heard a lot about Babcock being linked to Richie.
He's coaching. Actually,
hold on, let me get this
he's
right.
He's coaching
here.
Me actually. After the game, we're going to go out and he's going to tell me what fruit to buy at the market.
Babcock has been linked to Toronto. And Richie mentioned that. What I meant to say was Richie mentioned that earlier in the show, in the segment. I'm having a tough...
I wonder what kind
I'm
of bananas...
I'm having a tough...
The bananas I bought on Monday are still aren't yellow yet. It's really? Very troubling, yeah.
Mm. Well, you need a fruit coach.
I need a fruit coach. Maybe...
Ezzy shouldn't be that guy.
Not
he
me.
Buys his fruit at local convenience stores.
Ask Tim. Tim's a healthy guy. He's a young, healthy guy. No, but I think, I know we're up against the break here. I think there's... I wouldn't be surprised if Babcock stayed in Toronto... pardon me, Detroit. I wouldn't be surprised if he went to Toronto.
Let's call a timeout here. Let's call a timeout.
Babcock, I think, is someone you really want to watch because I think with 1 year left in his contract...
So far, this segment, you have him coaching me and Toronto.
That's true. Yeah, just go to break.
Okay, let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to discuss which route is more favorable for a young player, junior hockey or college hockey. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Minutes before the top of the hour, Saturday morning, TSN 1290, TSN 1290.ca. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Drew, first off, really pumped up about the new Illegal Curve sandwich coming out in about a month, I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We'll be doing a little taste test on the show. You said you had a beef with me on Twitter. I have a little beef with you.
Literally, like a steak.
No, it has to do with the ice bucket challenge and you not accepting it.
I was out of town when you challenged me. I didn't know what you were talking about, and I just chose to ignore you.
Well, hold on. Let's not make this personal. I saw that Mark Stewart and all the Jets were doing it, and I basically called Richie in the afternoon. I'm like, okay, I'm going to start an Illegal Curve ice bucket challenge.
Can we qualify that by saying I had no clue. I'm not on Twitter, so I had
But you said you're going to do it. We're going to Lake of the Woods. You're going to do it.
Yeah, I will do it. But let me continue here for a second.
But Drew hasn't even said he's accepting it. I mean, come on. We're raising awareness here. We're raising money. Yeah, I want to see you do an ice bucket challenge today.
Okay, I will do an ice bucket challenge.
That a boy.
But let's just talk quickly. So Ezzy, you know, we're sitting by our buddy's pool, our buddy Rock's pool, and I get a call from Ezzy saying, "I'm gonna meet me in the parking lot. I need you to come out and fill this garbage.
I need you to bring a blanket.
This garbage bin with water. I brought ice. I'm going to pour it over my head." And I said, I'm not on Twitter. So I said, "I don't know why you would do that. But okay." So I came out.
It's funny because
he does that every Saturday normally.
It's funny that Richie came out not knowing that it was the ice bucket challenge.
And it gets way better. I didn't know what the ice bucket challenge was. And then, I didn't know what it was. And our buddy Rock came out too. And we said to Ezzy, you know, what is this? Why would you be pouring ice on your head? And then our buddy Rock says, "Well, I think it's for charity." And Ezzy goes, "Oh, is it? Oh, that's great." So Ezzy was just going to pour ice on his head for absolutely no reason.
I knew it was for charity.
I'm not so sure about that.
I saw the Jets doing it for charity. By the way, I'm going to, I know we want to get into the whole college route here, but I'm going to preview my cheer here. But I think the ice bucket challenge is absolutely great. Anybody that has any problem with it,
I don't know, can
talk to me about it because it's amazing and it's so we've seen all the great videos with Biz Nasty and Bettman and Mark Chipman was doing it. I mean, come on. I mean, just. I'm bullying you a little bit here, Drew, I think it's just so much fun, there's nothing, no negatives about this at all.
I agree with you. I got no problems with it. You know what I have problems with? The people who are anti it because it's mainstream now whatever. It's like, really? You're making awareness of a debilitating, terrible disease, and their donations have gone through the roof, and you're going to be the guy who's a contrarian? Just go away. I don't really need you in my life if you're that guy right now.
Pick up a bucket of ice. It's hot out. Dump it on yourself.
Or don't do it, but just keep your mouth shut.
Yeah, exactly.
Either way, I'm fine with that. Anyways, the College Hockey Summit was in Winnipeg earlier this week.
Yeah, our boy KK was in town.
That's right. Kyle Kozier, a good friend of the program, and the guys from Veritas Hockey were here. And it's really a showcase for, NCAA hockey coming up to Canada, to Winnipeg in this instance, to see some young talent and see if there's potential for that young talent to crack a roster and be of interest to NCAA teams.
It's also a symposium for college hockey.
Absolutely.
And a kind of a recruiting process.
100%.
Yeah.
I mean, it's making more people aware of college hockey that might not necessarily be front and center, if they have that much talent and if they're looking to make that next step.
Yeah.
To you guys, I mean, obviously, our hockey careers have long passed us by, but, if you had the option, if you were an elite athlete and you could say you go the junior hockey route or the NCAA hockey route at this point in time, which one is of more appeal to you, both in the short term and in the long term?
I think it's a really good question, and we saw Sonny Milano apparently is playing for Plymouth now, and he was playing with the U.S. National Development Program. He was, of course, drafted by the Columbus Blue Jackets this past year, so that's a case where you have a guy that has the ability to play in the U.S. and he's choosing the OHL probably because of how he thinks it's going to develop his career, Richie. I think it's a very difficult question. You look at some of the elite players right now in the NHL, or just looking at players in the NHL now, and the differences between where they played their junior hockey and college hockey. Mm-hmm. Richie went to UND, and we know Zach Parise and Jonathan Toews and player after player. Travis Zajac, right? And we should qualify this too, Richie. These players, this symposium, they were mainly, I believe, 15 and 16 year old hockey players.
Sure.
I don't think they're players that are right now choosing. I think they would have made that choice. So I think a couple of years before they make the decision, that's when you're trying to recruit them. I think you can go to college if you're 17, but no younger than that. But I think it's a very interesting question, and we've seen the development of the United States Hockey League, and it's very common now to have the ability to play both. But this goes back to our discussion we were having with Rick Westhead about the conditions for junior hockey.
Mm-hmm.
Junior hockey is a lot more grueling. And first of all, if you have the ability, and we've seen the exemption rule with Aaron Ekblad and John Tavares that you can play at 15. But for the most part, you're talking 16-year-old kids, Richie, are going to play junior hockey, which means you're leaving your high school life behind you.
Right.
And you're going to go play 70 junior hockey games. But I think the argument about what better prepares you for the NHL is completely case by case. I think we've seen player after player come out of college hockey undrafted, but I don't think you can say that if you put your kid in junior hockey at 16 years old, he has a better chance at playing in the NHL as opposed to, let's say, going to a prep school or playing AAA hockey and then going to play college hockey. I think it's completely case by case. And I think, you know, we've seen the development of American college hockey. I don't think it's ever been stronger. I think it keeps getting stronger year after year. And I think junior hockey, it's a big challenge for them to compete with it, well, to be honest with you.
You know, it's a time thing too, right? Like if you look at junior hockey, as Rick West said, we discussed last week, you have a time frame where you can get, you know, a contribution toward your post-secondary educational expenses. But there's a time frame on that, right? You have to go within a certain amount of time after you're done your CHL career to be able to exercise that. Whereas in college, when you're going to play hockey down on a scholarship, you're able to go to school, you know, simultaneously. So it does speed up the process. Now, you can make fun of the classes, or sometimes, you know, whether, you know, NCAA, a little bit sketchy. It's in the news all the time now, but other sports in terms of whether they're actually writing the exams. But assuming that they are, you are farther ahead in terms of education, your educational career. If you enter at the younger age, you start going to school, and then by the time, you know, your career is done, you might be graduated, and then you can look at your next step. Whereas if you're playing through the CHL, you're not going to be enrolled in a university at that time. Although I think that's uncommon, if at all, to have the time to be able to do that. And you have to wait till after you're done if you're 20 or 21, and then you're looking at doing that. So, but, you know, but at the same time, people, the concern some people have with the NCAA is the lack of games you're playing, the lack of, you know,
weekend games only.
Playing basically Friday, Saturday, you know, Thursday sometimes, I believe. But usually you're playing the Friday, Saturday games, right? And you're traveling, you're playing weekend games. So they have occasional weekday games, but, you know, 35 to 40 games versus 70 and, you know, playing more, that some people think that's a huge factor. So, and as you said, you know, you can also get in at an earlier age in the college. You're waiting, you know, are you playing in the BCHL? Are you playing here in Manitoba in junior hockey? Are you playing the USHL before you're then going to that level? And how long are you playing there for? And, you know, compensation aspects and playing away from home. I do agree it's a case-by-case basis, but people have to understand that. I've heard, you know, David Branch speak about this, you know, at a
CHL president.
Yeah, CHL president. And you hear, you know, it was Paul Kelly for a while there now and different guys representing the NCAA. This is a heated battle for those players. I mean, there's an animosity there that I think sometimes people don't really get, aren't subjected to. And they compete for every player. And they're cutting down each other. You know, they talk about the strengths of what they can offer. But they're not talking about that without taking into account what the other can't.
And a lot of people don't hear about that. But if you want to, you can follow someone like a Mark Seidel on Twitter or a Sunaya Sapurji. They're tweeting about this quite a bit as far as these leagues, competing for players.
For sure.
And it is real. I mean, and it's happening at an early age. You're talking about, we hear, obviously, players are. Jacob Chychrun was the first overall pick in the OHL, and he's 15 years old. And you're hearing about players. We've always heard about players. Connor McDavid, we were hearing about him at 14 years old. Mm-hmm. But you're hearing about players. But I think in the case of the NCAA versus junior hockey, I think we're at a bit of a crossroads in a way with what's going on with the unions. And I don't think that's the solution. But I think you're starting to see more and more parents looking at the junior hockey route and saying, okay, the chances of my kid actually making the NHL are so slim. If he's going to go that route at 16, because as we mentioned, that's unless you're granted exceptional status, these are 16-year-old kids. So you're talking they leave in early grade 11. So they're and you know, it's a little bit different. A lot of kids, some of the smaller towns, but it's the same thing. I mean, it's however you look at it, you're leaving your peer group, and then you're going to play hockey, staying with the Billet family, and so is that
you're riding the buses in the depths of Winnipeg of Canadian winter for the most part.
And mm-hmm. you have to believe the reason why you're doing it, because you are playing at the highest level of hockey. It's elite hockey at the junior level. I still believe that that's the greatest feeder system. I think we'd all agree to that, as mm-hmm. opposed to college hockey. But I think college hockey is completely different, because you see guys like Kevin Hayes, 22 years old, they get their university degree, and then they're ready for the NHL. That's a different path. We're talking about, I mean, all of the players that are top prospects played in the CHL, whether that's, you know, for those who don't know, that's Canadian Hockey League. I'm talking Crosby, Tavares, Stamkos. I think it's still producing the most exceptional players, but I think we're starting to see Richie more focus on. I think it's parents are saying it's too many games. I don't know if their education is being taken care of. I think these are real issues, and as you mentioned, I think the NCAA route is a lot more appealing. And like you said, maybe parents are saying, you know what, my kid's going to play AAA or, as you mentioned, junior hockey. So, but in this case, it's AAA. So, you know, Winnipeg Thrashers, that type of thing, instead of going to the WHL, because I want him to get a university education before he might get to the NHL, which is, you know, not very likely to happen anyways.
Yeah, I think people don't realize it's a percentage chance of making it when you make the CHL, which is a very high level. It's not like it's, I believe, below 10%.
Right. It's not like it's an automatic. Yeah. Is it time for perhaps the eligibility rules to change in some regards? That once you play Canadian junior hockey, you maybe aren't automatically disqualified from playing NCAA hockey later on?
But that gets to two issues, right? First one is compensation for the CHL, and we talked to Rick Westhead about that and how that might change with the union. The other aspect is the NCAA and the, you know, what's going to happen with compensation for NCAA athletes, and how do you regulate that? Because football and basketball really are the ones that are funding all the other programs. You know, some places like hockey at UND and certain other places are successful, but many other places, the other programs are getting held up by the big, you know, the big football programs and things like that. So that's a complicated question, Drew. And I mean, we could probably do a whole show on that with, you know, the NCAA rules and how that the landscape is changing in other sports, because I think they're prioritized.
Yeah,
really football and things
football
like that.
And basketball, the real revenue sports,
right? And then you look at the CHL. Are they going to unionize? And if they're going to unionize, is there going to be agreement for compensation that's more than this? You know, this reimbursement that they've kind of put in place in lieu of per diems, which were nominal at best in any event. So, you know, there's business aspect. The landscape, as you said, we're you know, the landscape is going to change over the next 5 to 10 years, but I don't know if. The NCAA won't ever change the fact that I don't think the NCAA will change if you play in the CHL, you receive compensation.
You become a professional in their mind.
Right.
Now, you lose your amateur status.
I don't think that, certainly not willingly, I don't think that will change that.
Right.
So,
Both leagues are at a crossroads, and it'll be interesting to see how it unfolds over the next number of years, like you said, within the next 5 to 10 years. Let's go to break. When we come back, the NHL went to court this week, but they lost. We'll tell you about it. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Shortly before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. We're going to get to the NHL losing in court coming up at the start of the next hour, right up against a break here. Quickly wanted to touch on something that Dean Millard of our sister station in Edmonton reported earlier this week.
Did you report that on CKND Sportsline?
That's Darren Millard.
Oh, sorry.
It's his brother. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's his brother.
Yeah, this is Dean Millard.
I thought you said Darren Millard.
No, Dean Millard. This is of our sister station, TSN Radio in Edmonton, reported that the Edmonton Oilers, if they have Leon Draisaitl penciled into their lineup,
yep.
But if for some reason he isn't able to make the team, I mean, who knows what's going to happen? You never know until you actually get into the actual battles with a young player like that. The Oilers are more likely, supposedly, to send him back over to Europe to play and develop this year than to send him to the Prince Albert Raiders of the Western Hockey League. Your thoughts on that decision, if it comes to fruition by the Oilers, a sort of a change in strategy when it comes to developing young players?
I think it's interesting. Odd in that Prince Albert's pretty close to Edmonton. They kind of keep a real close eye on him and what's going on there. I'm not sure if they're going to station somebody in Europe to monitor his progress. But I find that decision to be a bit odd. Maybe it's something, you know, he's physically a big boy.
Yeah.
And I said on the draft show when we were there, he reminds me of Andrei Kopitar when you watch him.
6'2", 215 already at 18 years old.
And they clearly think that he's probably too devout. I would still... You know, you put him in Europe. The problem there is not only being able to keep a close eye on him, but what situations does he play in there? You know, what if the team is just worried about the bottom line? I mean, at the end of the day, the CHL want the player, the teams want to win, Drew.
Yeah.
But they also have an eye on development. And the teams in Europe, these aren't so much development. You know, when young players, it was like Kevin Fiala, I believe, drafted by Nashville. He's playing in the Swedish Elite League.
Yeah, for I believe HV71, if I'm
yes,
not mistaken.
But the point is, I mean, those guys, if they can help the team win, they play. But they don't put up huge numbers, first off, because they're so young. But second of all, because they're not put in positions to succeed that much because those teams want to win.
Sure.
So I'd be a little bit hesitant about that. I would probably start it off with a player or a draft pick who's of less importance, frankly, than Leon Draisaitl, and see how that progresses before I would throw my top pick there.
I'm kind of confused by this as well. You know, I guess it is interesting because it's the old debate of if a high-end prospect, Richie, isn't quite ready for the NHL, should he be playing another year in junior or should he be playing in the AHL? Well, we know that that's not an option. That wasn't an option for Mark Scheifele. It wasn't an option for Josh Morrissey. To me, it's a little bit confusing, and I think the big loser here is obviously the Prince Albert Raiders, who would love to have Leon Draisaitl on their team if he doesn't make the Oilers. And it seems like there's a good chance that Leon Draisaitl could make this team. They could use a big winger. And I think, you know, he fits in with you could argue this with me, but I don't think the Oilers are going to be a playoff team this year. And I think they want to make the playoffs, but I still think he has a good shot at making this team and they could use him. And Richie makes some good points about, well, how do you monitor that? And, you know, is that really... I think that he would be best served going back to play for Prince Albert in the WHL. But this is obviously, you know, raising Dee Millard's raising this issue that, you know, I guess they don't feel that that's the best for him. I kind of have mixed, and the reason why I have mixed emotions on it is because I'm not sure if that would best serve him. I don't know if that. I think, you know, there's a reason why Mark Scheifele spent those extra 2 years in junior. There's a reason why Josh Morrissey, there's still a chance he'll spend another year in junior, and he spent last year in junior. There's still something to be said to be the captain of a team, to hopefully be on a winning team, to, you know, so you don't see this very often, Drew.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's
now, remember, he's going to be lining up at center as eventually they might start him off on the wing to ease him in, but he's going to be a center, and then they need size up the middle, and that's been a problem for them. You know, Nugent Hopkins got an A before he was dealt. But another thing to note quickly before we go to break is the coach in Prince Albert is Corey Clouston.
Right.
Yep.
You know, and he's a little hard on players, and, you know, certainly he hasn't had the best relationships with NHL guys, but he's coached in the National Hockey League. He's understanding of the process and coaching the AHL, and he's understanding of the process developing players in the AHL, knowing what it takes to play in the NHL. I just think there's too many things there that there's too many variables and risks to be able to send him over to Europe. I think, again, I would be okay with the experiment if it were to be a player of lesser talent, a player with less risk involved in his development.
Let's go to break. When we come back, now we'll look at the court case the NHL lost this week. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
One hour down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Still to come in this hour, Chris Daniels, King 5 news reporter in Seattle. He's been at the forefront of the Seattle, NHL in Seattle story. He's going to join us to give us an update in about 30 minutes' time. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the longest-running independent comedy club in North America. For nearly 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, Graham Clark is in town, his final night in town. And just announced for November, to celebrate Rumors' 30th anniversary, November 14th and 15th, a four-comedian superstar show featuring Derek Edwards, Mike Wilmot, Daryl Lennox, and Dave Hempstead. Those four comedians, one stage, two nights only, celebrating Rumors' 30th anniversary, November 14th and 15th. Tickets available now, Rumors Restaurant, rumorscomedyclub.com, or give them a call at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club.
Now, Drew, before we get into the court case,
yes,
there actually is some hockey. I found some hockey.
Really?
Ivan Hlinka tournament.
Yes.
Canada's going for the 7th gold medal in a row.
That's right. It's so underway Canada right
plays,
now.
Canada plays Czech Republic in the final. So, I mean, there's some hockey. Somewhere in the middle of August, There's some hockey being played.
I got to be shocked. I'm surprised they don't broadcast this at this point.
Well,
in
the
time.
Highlights were on TSN. I was watching this
Yeah, they
morning.
Play the highlights.
Yeah, I know.
Scored 11 goals
highlights.
Against the U.S. yesterday.
Yeah, 11-5 or something.
Yeah,
11-5.
This is a big scouting tournament, though.
Yep.
Yeah, that's of course. And given that they broadcast pretty much every international tournament of any degree at this point, I am a little surprised it isn't that somebody hasn't picked it up.
I think it probably eventually will be, Drew. This tournament actually is far more important scouting-wise than, say, the World Junior Championship, which is more of a television
made for TV.
Then, yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Speaking of television, good segue there. The NHL went to court this earlier this week, or actually last week to be more accurate, and they lost. They went to court to try and get a court case, a lawsuit dismissed against them. It was filed by a number of fans in the United States that pretty much, and the basis of the court is that the plaintiffs are arguing that the current method of having to buy NHL center ice mm-hmm. to watch, quote, out-of-market games. We've all heard that expression before. You know, if you want to watch out-of-market games, as in, you know, games that are not involving the Winnipeg Jets in Winnipeg.
And not on national TV.
And not on national TV. If mm-hmm. you want to watch a local Carolina Hurricanes, New York Islanders game on a Tuesday night in Winnipeg, you have to buy NHL center ice.
You do.
These fans or these plaintiffs have gone to court and argued that that method, forcing fans to buy that, has a, quote, negative impact on the output, price, and perhaps even quality of sports programming. NHL went to court to try and get that lawsuit dismissed, and they lost earlier this week, and that court case is going to go to trial in 2015. If the plaintiffs end up winning that case, it's going to have a significant impact on not just the NHL, but on all sports in general and how they make available to their fans out-of-market, quote-unquote, out-of-market games.
In the U.S.
In the U.S. It is important to point out that this is strictly United States-related only at this point in time. The jurisdiction doesn't cross over into Canada. What it means is that if they lose, if you're a... Right now, if you're in New York City, mm-hmm. they broadcast the Sunshine Network, which is a network that carries Tampa Bay Lightning games. Mm-hmm. And, you know, right now it's available in New York. If you go and you're in New York and you want to sit down and watch that Tampa Bay Lightning game mm-hmm. on the Sunshine Network or mm-hmm. on Fox Sports Tampa Bay, whatever it's called, it's not available. They black it out there. Yep. It says it's available on your guide, but it's not available because you're in the New York market area. You're not in the Tampa Bay Lightning market area. The only way to get that game is via NHL Center Ice.
Now, that's going to be just to clarify, that's actually that was the way it is in for Canadian television viewers as well. Next year, it won't be that way. If there's a local game on the rival networks, those local games will actually be available to the national audience if you have those channels on Wednesday, Saturday, or Sunday. Those are the designated national nights.
Right.
So that's different than years past.
Sure.
But I'll let you keep going on that.
But if it's any of the other nights, you would still have to purchase NHL Center Ice.
Which now, because of what I just said, there will be less games that are part of the NHL Center Ice package. And I've been led to believe, I don't believe that the price has been released yet, but I've been led to believe that the price for center ice will now go down because there will be actual less games broadcast on center ice than there have been in the past.
Center ice, which was available at just about $180, give or take, for the last number of years, which we would get all the out-of-market games that are not nationally televised, mm-hmm. will now... So pretty much what it's going to do...
Not confirmed, but I've been told that it'll be cheaper.
And if this court case goes to fruition and if the plaintiffs win, pretty much if you're the Washington Capitals... And you have the most marketable Russian hockey player in the world, yeah. and you do with Alex Ovechkin. Yeah. You can go to a city or a cable company that has a large Russian population, mm-hmm. say New York City, which mm-hmm. has a large Russian population, and say, we can sell you our games. You can watch Washington Capitals games in New York City without having to subscribe to the entirety of an NHL Center Ice package. It will only cost you X number of dollars per month. Is it time now? I mean, you can really sort of consider it a la carte pricing.
Yeah, which
for
is
hockey,
becoming common.
Which is becoming common in all facets of life. Is it time now that the center ice and the MLB extra innings and the NFL Sunday ticket, which is not quite the same thing, but the NBA package, whatever those
league
are,
pass.
League pass, yep. is it time that that model sort of goes by the wayside and instead you make it a la carte pricing available to viewers everywhere.
Richie, I know before hold your thought there for a second, but I think that this can can only be positive for the consumer. And I think why this is such a big deal, and Rick Westhead, who we had on a couple of weeks ago, was writing about it, is because it's not good for the NHL. I think that's what they want, the control, right? Am I right about that?
Well, I mean, as a viewer, like, we're assuming that the price for a per team on a per team basis, if Chicago Blackhawks were to sell their rights to a guy in Florida, maybe it would be what we're paying here, you know, for Jets games, $10 a month. So that's, you know, $80-$90. Why wouldn't I just pay $180 for every team's games?
Well, because you are...
You better still... I know I am that different person who will watch the Carolina Islanders game on a Tuesday. But having said that, the price per game that you're getting right now on NHL Center Ice, to me, is great value. So I would hope a la carte, if a la carte does become an option, I would just hope and I would assume that the package that was available, the NHL Center Ice package of all the games, would still be available at a very similar price.
But you'd have to think that it would be a package where there's a regional package where you'd get all of the, I don't know, New York area teams or something like that, unless they offered kind of like an on-demand where you could get any game and just pay a buck for a game. But I've had Center Ice since I was probably in high school.
Yeah.
And I know Richie's had it for a long time, and obviously we have a hockey show and we're big hockey fans. You pay $180 and you get Center Ice. But I've always had a huge problem with the blacked out games. And I think hopefully for those fans out there that have NHL Center Ice and they have Jets TV and... You know, Jets TV is separate, but...
If you're in Vancouver and you're a Jets fan and you only want to watch Jets games,
yeah, that's the
you
point.
Have to buy NHL Center Ice. You can't just buy
right.
Jets TV.
But the point is, Drew, is if you're in Winnipeg and you want to watch the Jets, so you're talking, you know, October, November, December, January, February, March, April. So
yeah.
$10 a month times 7, right?
Mm-hmm.
7 or 8. So you're talking about 7. So $70 plus that $80. You're paying an extra $100 just to get every other team's games. You might not want that. But it's pretty good value to me.
But if you want, but you can't, if you're a Jets fan, if you want both, you have to pay for both. You can't buy, if you buy Center Ice in Winnipeg.
In Winnipeg, yes. We're talking about the Vancouver guy.
I don't know, but I'm saying Winnipeg. If you're a Jets fan,
if you
buy Center Ice,
yep. mm-hmm.
you don't get the Jets games
right.
if you're in Winnipeg.
Right.
You then have to pay $80. You pay $180 for Center Ice,
and then
another $10 a month
right.
or whatever.
Depending on your carrier,
yeah. whatever it is. Yeah. It's about $10 a month. And so you're really in for $260.
Yeah.
You know, if you only want to watch...
It's like going to one game.
If you only want to watch two teams, if you only want to watch the Chicago Blackhawks and the Winnipeg Jets, it costs you $260, and you get 28 teams' worth of other games that you have no interest in whatsoever.
I'm saying if you had to pay for the Jets in Chicago, and Chicago was the same price as the Jets, again, you would save money overall, but for if you were going to pay $160 or $175 for two teams, why not pay $260 for 30 teams?
Well,
people might not want that, but I'm just saying, like, I understand you guys' point. I think that's the way it's going to go.
You'd hope that where it's going, well, there's a couple of, I guess, points here. You'd hope that Center Ice is going to include more games. I also think it's ridiculous with the playoffs, and they used to show the first round and all that. I think if you're getting Center Ice...
Because the first round, second round, is still local broadcasts that are available to the
right.
in those. Well, so, for example...
Why isn't that included? Charge people more and give them those games.
In Canada, it's national
right
for the playoffs. But right. in the U.S., they do national and local for the first two rounds.
I remember being in Kentucky. It must have been during my wedding. The Predators had made the playoffs that year, and I could see the Predators playoff games on Fox Sports Nashville.
That's right.
Yep.
You know, so that was in
Terry Crisp.
Terry Crisp, exactly. Yep.
Weber. I think the point here, Drew, is, and I compare this to WWE TV. You can now pay, I don't think it's available in Canada yet. I might be wrong about that.
I think it's coming soon.
WWE TV, pay $10 a month, and you get everything. So you get all the pay-per-views, you know, WrestleMania, all that. And what I'm saying is I think that's the model. If you're a huge hardcore hockey fan and you're paying $200 a month, let's throw in another $80 or whatever for, you know, if it's a Jets TV or Leafs or whatever. Let's say $250, $300, whatever it is.
For the year.
And you want to see all the hockey games. If you're a hockey fan, you should be able to get every hockey game. There shouldn't be blackouts. That's why you're paying that money, to see every hockey game. So it's a February, a Tuesday night. You can see any game you want, at your fingertips. And I think I think this is good to create. Hopefully, there's more competition, and I think for fans, this will ultimately be good because they'll be able to see more games. And I think the NHL, maybe there's issues with how much revenue is going to come their way, and how I don't think they want less people to subscribe to NHL Center Ice. I think that might be another issue here. But I think ultimately, if you're giving fans better bang for their buck and more options, I think it's a good thing. I think the in-market blackouts and all that, I think that's ridiculous. You pay for Center Ice, you should get every single hockey game.
I'll tell you one thing, by the way.
Yeah.
First off, the NHL lost their
motion to dismiss.
So I mean, that case hasn't been heard yet, as you mentioned, Drew. Sometimes you might want to get what you wish for here, because if the NHL, if this is thrown out, and the NHL is creating a new package, you don't think they'll try and maximize dollars and maybe get more money at the end of the day?
Of course.
So are you sure you want to mess with this right now?
Well, I mean, and what Rick Westhead mentions in the article, and we'll tweet it out now, is that
it's a good article.
Know, for a lot of the franchises that have these really marketable players, they might be interested in the NHL, in the plaintiffs winning this case ultimately, because then they can go to these different cable companies and, you know, in the case of the Tampa Bay Lightning, as their games are broadcast in New York, or their channel is broadcast in New York.
Charge more.
They can charge more, and they can the lawyer familiar with the case says it's, quote, found money. You get an extra 15 or 20 cents per month per interested subscriber. You're not doing anything else except for the fact that a switch is being flipped and your game is available.
Like NHL wouldn't have sold rights to in certain Russian cities to watch the games if they couldn't? Like, they wouldn't maximize?
You're right. The NHL. All
they do is maximize dollars. All they do is try and make as much money as possible in everything. All these leagues do. Suddenly they're not going to do that. And now because of this, they're going to start making more money as if it wasn't available before. I don't know. I think I understand the whole a la carte idea. I just think that might be something that's available. That might be something that's tossed out there. But at the end of the day, I think what you're going to see is the value provided by the Center Ice is going to be far greater than any of these a la carte options.
We just spoke about the NHL and their owners maybe finding some money down the road. They got a nice paycheck earlier this week. We'll talk about it next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, TSN 1290.ca. Still to come next segment, Chris Daniels, King 5 news reporter in Seattle, to talk about the latest news on the NHL and the possibility of a team either relocating or be maybe a franchise, an expansion franchise, being granted to the Seattle area. So he's going to join us in about 8 or so minutes time. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. Dave Schultz in the Globe and Mail earlier this week reports that it was a good week for NHL owners, and I guess for the NHL in general. Each of the owners got an unexpected $5 million payment from the NHL as a result of the success of both the league's stadium series and the first payment made by Rogers Communications on its $5.2 billion 12-year NHL broadcast deal. So the NHL distributed over $150 million in payments to the NHL owners earlier this week. You know, we criticized on this show the stadium series, saying it was too many games and everything else.
Yeah, it was a joke.
It was a joke
from
our perspective.
And there you go. There's money. That's what we're talking about last segment.
That's right.
Maximize dollars.
That's right. They don't leave anything on the table.
There's nothing funny about money.
There's nothing funny about money. What about funny money?
There's nothing funny about money.
Okay. But the NHL owners each received an extra $5 million in payment this week. Obviously not going to make a big impact for certain franchises, the Leafs. I mean, I think the Jets won't make a huge deal.
Well, the Leafs are strapped for cash.
Yeah. But the Coyotes and the Panthers, who each are at the low end of the revenue table, will gladly welcome $5 million that they didn't expect to receive. It will affect the salary cap in 2015-16. Mm-hmm. It won't affect this year's because the cap has already been set, but it will affect next year's salary cap because, you know, this is considered hockey-related revenue, so the players will be entitled to a 50-50 split on it. You know, just, I suppose it's good news for the NHL pretty much all around in this story.
Well, I mean, the other interesting aspect of it is whether, you know, the rumors that Rogers are already losing money on the deal because they've paid so much money up front, as people know.
Right.
Money in general. The contract they've signed for the $5.2 billion.
Yeah.
But yeah, sure, the NHL, I mean, Drew, the problem is you have all these outdoor games, and to me it's laughable because you're having these games. First off, the quality of the game is terrible. It's slow, the ice is bad, you have to worry about conditions, and you've sold out. And that's all. You've sold out and you made money, and that's fine. Now, I'm happy that they're acknowledging that they've sold out to the extent that they only have 2 games this year instead of 10. And remember, the players are getting half of this anyways.
So the players are just as culpable as the owners are.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'll be honest with you guys. I can't even... I think it's in Washington, the Winter Classic.
It's Washington, Chicago this year, and then it's San Jose against LA at Levi's.
I knew San Jose, LA at Levi's, but I couldn't remember.
Well, yeah, it's like, who cares?
Well, following up, I know Matt Leibel was at the game in New York after the Super Bowl. There was several games.
Well, him and Huss were there together.
Yeah, Huss was there, too. And I agree with Richie. I know we talked about this last winter. I like the games more, but I do agree. I think you got to cap it at 2. 6 is too many. And it's just too many. It really is. And I don't think anybody would really argue with that. I think some fans might say more outdoor games. I love outdoor hockey. I just think it's too much as far as taking away from the spectacle. I think the spectacle is great. I just think you want to keep it to a Winter Classic, a Heritage Classic. I'm all for, doing the games in the hot markets and all that. But, back to the article that David Schultz wrote, Richie's touching on the television deal, and David Schultz touched on it in the article. I think it's great news for the Florida Panthers, the Phoenix Coyotes. They get the more cash, and then they had the Gila River Casino is the new naming rights of the arena. To me, it's good because now all the franchises are, even though those franchises are having issues with drawing paid attendance, selling more tickets, it's getting a little bit better, but I think in Florida they'd still probably like to sell 3,000 or 4,000 more tickets for every game.
They get the money.
They get the money. So that's I'm looking at this, that this is really only good news for the NHL as a whole. The teams, yeah, sure, the salary cap's probably going to go up to $75 million, something like that, next year. But as Richie mentioned, these games are taking... They had that many games last year to capitalize on profits, that's all.
You get the money, but they have to spend more money because the cap's going to go up as a result of the more money.
That's right. I mean, the salary cap, which, is
still a benefit, but...
Yeah, everybody ultimately is going to... Both sides, players and owners, will ultimately be happy about this, and that there's going to be more money on the table next year that teams have to spend. You touched on it briefly, but in the same article, sort of at the bottom there, is that another interesting part is that people in Rogers are worried. The board of directors has everybody concerned about the cost that they spent, that it's going to be hard for them to recoup the money on their investment in the NHL broadcasting rights.
That was the talk originally, I mean, because it was just so high.
Right. And it's something they're not unfamiliar with, that is that because they also overpaid for the Olympic rights a number of years ago, yeah. And they had to, they had to cut costs in order to try and make that a profitable investment. I mean,
cut costs means people lose jobs.
That's exactly what it means. Cut costs is, unfortunately, people lose jobs. And I mean, it's hard to believe that. I mean, $5.2 billion from the day one is just, I mean, that's an absurd amount of money.
But hold on, let's go back to the segment two. Let's go 2 segments back about how the NHL is not trying to maximize the amount of money they're making.
Right.
Be careful what you wish for.
That's a fair point. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Chris Daniels of King News 5 in Seattle to talk about the latest on the NHL in Seattle. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
10:30 in the morning, Saturday morning, the 16th of August. Here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from King 5 News in Seattle, Chris Daniels. Chris has been at the forefront of the Seattle arena debate and the possibility of the NHL coming to Seattle. So we're pleased to welcome him to talk about that topic. Chris, good morning and thanks for joining us.
Good morning to you in Winnipeg. I see it's going to be a lovely Saturday there.
Absolutely. Bright and sunny as it always is here in Winnipeg. Sometimes it's a little bit colder, but at least it's bright and sunny.
Yeah.
Chris, obviously we brought you on to talk about it in that there seems to be news earlier this week that a Seattle NHL franchise might have an owner, and his name is Victor Coleman, not from Seattle, from Vancouver. But what can you tell us about Mr. Coleman?
Yeah, he is, I guess you could say, the front runner right now in the NHL's eyes to be an owner here in Seattle. Grew up in Vancouver on the west end of town there in British Columbia. He says he remembers when the Canucks came to town, when Vancouver was awarded the franchise, and grew up loving hockey, watching the Canucks, watching their first game. He's since moved down to Los Angeles as a bit of a real estate mogul, the president and CEO of a company called Hudson Pacific Properties. They're publicly traded, and they've acquired a lot of land on the West Coast. His company has, including a couple of pieces of property in the Seattle area. He told me earlier this week, though, that is separate from his interest in the NHL. Those buildings happen to be down near this proposed arena site in Seattle. He says that he believes the NHL would work. He believes it would work in Seattle primarily because of the connection with Vancouver and the Lower Mainland and Lower British Columbia, that there's a lot of people that are built into this area, a lot of hockey fans as well in Western Washington that follow the Western Hockey League. So he believes this town, with the demographics and the wealth that's kind of poured in here in the last few years, that it would be a ripe market for hockey and for the National Hockey League.
Chris, do you think it'd work?
It's a good question, and I think one of the things that a lot of people don't talk about here is the ticket price, and that it's probably out of the gate going to be a three-digit ticket price. On the flip side of that, there are two hockey teams, Western Hockey League teams, here in the greater Seattle area, one to the north in a town called Everett, the other in a town to the south called Kent, and one of the largest adult hockey leagues in the country here in Western Washington, very active, very organized. And so the NHL has looked at it and believes everything you hear, everything I've heard from the league offices, they're very interested in Seattle. They've said everything to hint that they want to be here and want to have an expansion franchise here. I don't think there's any bones about it. They've dropped enough hints here in the last year. Whether it would work, they would have to be successful out of the gate, and that's a big question to build up the fan base. And then if the NHL was to come here, say, before the NBA and get some of the corporate support and the TV and digital rights before an NBA franchise here, that would also help the NHL.
And is this for sure, Chris, going to be expansion? Is there any chance of purchasing an existing team right now?
Well, it was one day, the Coyotes were one day away from moving here last year. If that vote goes one vote the other direction, and that lease deal down in Glendale had been rejected, the Coyotes were coming here. What Victor Coleman says at this point is he is strictly looking at an expansion franchise, and there's no existing franchises that are on the move. So he is strictly focused on expansion. And the NHL, I think, would have liked to have done it this year. Gary Bettman and Bill Daly were both here in Seattle back in May, along with Coleman, flanking him in two separate meetings, one with the Seattle mayor, one with the King County executive. Those are the two bodies which approved this arena deal back in 2012. So they are interested in being here as well. I think they've just dropped about every hint possible here in the last year, and it would be an expansion franchise at this point.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Chris Daniels. Chris is with King 5 News in Seattle. He's been at the forefront of the NHL in Seattle discussion.
Chris, in the article you wrote earlier this week for King 5 News, you were talking about Chris Hansen and the path running through him and how the deal with the city is still pending. What's the latest on that? And I guess what's the timeline here in the short term and long term?
Yeah, so it's a bit complicated. It was approved by the city and the county councils here in Seattle back in 2012 with a five-year window, a so-called memorandum of understanding, pending two things: an environmental review of the project and the site that Hansen would like to build it at, and then also his acquisition of an NBA franchise. And last year, he was very close to that, rejected by the NBA and his acquisition of the Sacramento Kings. That team ended up staying in Sacramento. And the process had kind of been sped up, this environmental review. It is a lengthy review of the site where he would want to build. He spent over $60 million in land down in an area that's south of CenturyLink and Safeco Field that your listeners may be familiar with, the football and the baseball stadiums. He would like to build it there, but the city is now looking at that site in comparison to the existing arena site, Key Arena, and another piece of property next to it, and figuring out all the issues in the environmental review, including traffic and electricity into the area and all those things, and whether that area will work. That's a process that was sped up and then slowed down because of the Kings situation. And so now it looks like it won't be done until at least November of this year. And, you know, that's not a timeline that the NHL necessarily wants. They came here in May and asked, hey, is there any way this can be sped up? Is there any way that we can kind of flip the deal around? Because they would like to come in here and prompt construction of the arena by an NHL team. And the way this deal is constructed right now, it's the exact opposite. And for Hansen, he has a financial interest in having an NHL team because he's fronting so much of the arena cost. Mm-hmm. If it's constructed, he gets additional money in terms of public financing if there is an NBA and NHL team. So he's also interested in doing that. He's not a big hockey fan, though, and so that's why he's been looking for a partner. And with Victor Coleman, it seems like he may have one that he likes working with. They've signed this non-binding letter of intent, which lays out how much Coleman would put into the arena and also the revenues that he could expect to receive. So that is a positive step for hockey fans here because it's the furthest along that anybody's gone with Hansen in terms of moving forward on this arena project.
Chris, any known resistance from Francesco Aquilini, owner of the Vancouver Canucks?
No, in fact, there was a bus tour earlier this year with some elected officials and some people with the local sports commission. They went up to Vancouver, met with some Canucks officials, went to a Canucks game. Vancouver is an ally for Seattle in this. And, you know, I think the NHL looks a lot at what has happened with Major League Soccer here in what is the I-5 corridor from Vancouver to Seattle and down to Portland, and sees the built-in rivalry and how many fans go up and down the corridor here. I don't think Portland necessarily is out of the running here for an NHL franchise. They have an arena down there, the Rose Garden, that's been since renamed to the Moda Center, that's about a 15-year-old building that is compatible for the NHL, could host an NHL team. Almost that Paul Allen, the owner of the Blazers down there, who's also living in Seattle, he almost had the Penguins a few years ago and was trying to move them there. So I think the NHL is also interested in Portland because of kind of that MLS model and how it's worked here with three cities that love their teams and travel back and forth to see them. And I think that's what intrigues the NHL about this area and the fact that there's a couple of Western teams needed to balance out the divisions, balance out the conferences.
We saw what happened when fans from Vancouver invade Seattle with the Jays playing in Seattle against the Mariners earlier this week. A lot of unhappy Jays fans as it happens, but you could certainly see how the rivalry would tie in from Vancouver all the way down to Seattle. Chris, we'll let you go on this last question. As with any arena, there's always the talk about public money versus private money. How does that factor into this? Is there public money involved in the arena project, and is there resistance to that being contributed to the project?
Yeah, I mean, it's complicated in that I think the term that probably should be used is public financing. What Hansen gets if he gets an NBA franchise is about $145 million U.S. From the city primarily. If he gets the NHL, it's up to $200 million between the city and the county here. And Hansen has funds built into this MOU that would repay that financing, so there's no new taxes or anything like that, and the majority of the funding of the arena out of the gate comes from him. Yes, there's been some opposition to that back in 2012 before this was approved. What Hansen ended up doing was saying, of that public financing, I'm creating a transportation fund to try and try and help out with transportation down in the Soto area south of the stadiums there where he'd like to build. The bigger issue has been the talk about what building three stadiums next to each other, the baseball, the football, and a basketball hockey arena, what that would look like. It's right near the Port of Seattle on the waterfront here, a very industrial area with a lot of traffic in and out. So there's been more really concern about that and continues to be versus the financing. So once this environmental review is done, it still needs approval one more time from the city and county councils. They have a chance to sign off on it again, and that's where we'll probably hear more of this discussion about traffic and the infrastructure and whether that area can hold it. So that's the big hang-up right now, in addition to whether an NBA or NHL franchise will be awarded to Seattle.
I lied, Chris. I have one more question for you. I mean, we've seen that the Seattle market, since the Supersonics left for Oklahoma City, we've seen that they've sort of been used as a stalking horse by a lot of different NBA franchises and the NBA itself to get new arenas in other markets. Is there any resentment in the Seattle market growing towards the NBA any further, given how sort of the team was stolen away by Oklahoma City?
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting question, and I would tell you that in 2008, 2009, 2010, the NBA was poisonous in this market. And what Chris Hansen skillfully did starting in about 2011, 2012 was kind of tap into this nostalgic vein in Seattle about the NBA prior to the Seahawks championship. Earlier this year, that the Sonics really were the only major professional franchise to win a championship here in the city. He kind of tapped into that, brought in some old Sonics to make appearances in the city, and that got people excited about the NBA again. And it was funny, after the NBA voted against the Kings' purchase and relocation, a lot of the arrows came out again at David Stern, the NBA commissioner here. Not a beloved figure here in Seattle. He's now retired, though, and Adam Silver has taken over. So perhaps there's a fresh start with the NBA here in Seattle. And the NHL, I mean, they have a clean slate here in Seattle. There's been no bad business dealings here. So that's a plus in the NHL's column if they ever wanted to come here, is a fresh start. And again, banking on the MLS model, and in fact the Sounders had a fresh start. The Sounders came in, by the way, the same year the Sonics left, and that's been part of their phenomenon and how they've taken off here. So it'll be interesting to watch. This has definitely been a saga. For me, it's been 8 years here in Seattle following the ups and downs of this whole arena project in the NBA and NHL, and there's no end yet.
Chris Daniels is a reporter for King 5 News in Seattle. He joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show to discuss the latest on the NHL in Seattle and the arena debate. Chris, thanks very much for joining us this morning.
Yeah, good to talk to you guys. Pleasure.
Likewise. Best of luck in everything there. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Chris Daniels, King 5 news reporter in Seattle, updating us on the NHL in Seattle saga. Are they sleepless?
I was going to say, you could almost call it sleepless in Seattle.
Seemed like it's a matter of time there, but the big thing we didn't speak about with Chris, because it wasn't relevant necessarily to questions that we had to him, but it's going to be expansion, which he alluded to being expansion. The NHL has said, or at least sources have said, it won't be one team, it'll be two.
Two. See, and the other options generally, if they want it to be West.
Yes.
Because to balance out the league.
That's
so, I mean, this it wouldn't necessarily be Quebec City.
It'd be Vegas and Seattle right now, it seems like.
Vegas,
it.
Or he mentioned Portland, because they're, you know.
I don't know if Portland and Seattle would both dip in the same time. I think it would be Vegas and one of those two.
My money would be on Vegas as well at that point. And then you get a balanced 16 teams in each conference. Yeah. And you know, you have the sort of the. I wouldn't be shocked if you saw further realignment potentially at that point in time either. Go to the NFL's 8 divisions, 4 teams per division model.
Yeah.
You know, the NHL might want to replicate something along those lines. Anyways, it'll be interesting to keep an eye on everything that goes on in Seattle. couple news and notes from around the NHL. We mentioned earlier that Kevin Hayes, former first-round draft pick of the Chicago Blackhawks, 24th overall in 2010, is now an unrestricted free agent, free to sign with any team after he doesn't reach terms with the Blackhawks. He was a finalist for the Hobey Baker Award last season, and the Flames are supposedly at the forefront of the bidding.
The forefront of the bidding, and they have two guys who would make it very appealing for him.
Right.
He played last year for Boston College. His line mate, Johnny Gaudreau, really highly rated prospect, and center Bill Arnold were his two line mates.
And they're both Calgary Flames prospects, so there's a lot of tie-ins there. His brother plays in Florida for the Panthers, Jimmy Hayes, who was actually traded from the Blackhawks to the Panthers, I believe it was last season, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. And supposedly the Bruins are also interested. Is that's what you said as well, Izzy?
Bruins because of the connection there. And
Boston
yeah, College. Yeah.
Boston College connection. And I think we heard Colorado yesterday is in there. I think you're looking at teams that he would go to, I think, are teams where he obviously feels he can play in the NHL next year. At 22 years old, I think, as a player that's out of college, I think that's why he's looking at Chicago. Mm-hmm. We talked about that before. And
well, looking to get out of Chicago because Hossa and Kane are ahead of him there.
Yeah, and so you're looking at I think there is going to be significant interest. I think there could be more than even those four or five teams.
Well, it'll be 29 teams who are interested, but those four to five teams are the ones. I mean,
absolutely.
Who's going to be able to compete with that? Play with his two line mates from college, play with his brother. I think Florida and Calgary seem to make the most sense because if we're saying that he's not going to Chicago because of opportunity, then why would he go to Boston? There's no opportunity there.
I think
there.
Boston and Colorado, those teams are obviously cup-contending teams. I think we'd all agree with that. But I think for him, I think you're right, Richie.
He's still only eligible. Correct me if I'm wrong, but he's still only eligible to sign the max entry-level contract. Is that right?
I believe it's a two-year deal entry-level.
It's a two-year entry-level deal, at which point afterwards he would be RFA still?
Yes, RFA.
And, we've seen this time and time again. I mean, Kevin Hayes is a great hockey player. He's a point-per-game player in college. We mentioned Hobey Baker finalist. Johnny Gaudreau was the Hobey Baker winner.
Yeah.
There's no guarantee Kevin Hayes is stepping into the NHL and getting 65 points
next
year, winning the Calder Trophy. But I mean, he's got the size. He's got some physicality to his game. He's got a good reach. He can score goals. So, I mean, this is a guy that can definitely add. I mean, for the Winnipeg Jets, the right wing happens to be a strength of the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you're looking at a player who can – a team like the Calgary Flames, who just drafted Sam Reinhart. I mean, they're – and Sean Monahan looks like a good draft pick. I mean, he's probably looking
at Sam Bennett, not Reinhart.
Sorry, Sam Bennett. Yeah. And so Sam Reinhart was a Buffalo draft pick. You're looking at a guy that has a lot of options.
Yeah.
And so you can't fault him. The guy that did this a few years back, it was Blake Wheeler. Same situation.
Blake Wheeler did it. Jason Gregoire signed with the Jets. There's different guys who've done it. So it's an odd loophole. But, he's taking advantage of trying to be able to make more money, really, because if he gets more opportunity, the ability is to make more money more quickly than the other option of playing Chicago. Now,
there's Jimmy Hayes. He was traded by the Hawks, so people have said that.
But that's opportunity, though.
That's opportunity. But I think you're right, Richie. It is that, and I think he's probably looking at the team and he's saying, "I'm going to play in Rockford next year in the AHL, and I don't want to do that."
Right. Yeah.
So.
Jean-Sébastien Giguère announced his retirement, or he's going to announce his retirement next week, so I guess he announced his pre-retirement. Yeah. 2003...
Get him on. Let's get him on.
Generally, we'll look into that. The NHLPA will send out a release of that sort.
Yep.
I'll send an email. 2003 Conn Smythe winner, 2007 Stanley Cup winner, both with the Ducks, and more importantly, the last Hartford Whalers player to play in the NHL.
No, he had a weird, a different style, a style that was more suited to the late 90s, early 2000s, in that he was a guy who would basically just take up room. He was very positionally sound, and he would work the angles. And when he got in the zone, I mean, remember, never mind the Cup in 07, he was very good, but it was the 03 that really, if I think about Jean-Sébastien Giguère's career, it was at 03. I remember that save off the line against Minnesota, the stick back. I mean, he was just tremendous, and he obviously won the Conn Smythe, deservedly so, in my opinion, similar to Hextall, I believe, in 87. I believe it was 87 against the Oilers, just took his team. We spoke about Mike Babcock. That's that same team.
Yeah.
Took his team to a level where really nobody expected them to be. And I thought, for the most part, it was pretty classy classy throughout his career. And he had interesting. It was Hartford and Calgary, and he really couldn't find his game. And then he finds it in Anaheim, and it was great to see. So, it's another career. It was a great career. Yeah. And it's not easy to play a goaltender in the National Hockey League. A ton of pressure. And to be able to go to two cup finals, go to game seven in one, and win in game five in the other, kudos.
That's right. Sticking with Anaheim, as I'll let you get in this, Jacob Silverberg signs a one-year contract worth $850,000 in Anaheim. He was a restricted free agent without arbitration rights, obviously. 10 goals, 23 assists for 33 points in 52 games last year. Are the Ducks looking to Silverberg to step it up and maybe take a more prominent role on the team in this coming season?
I think they absolutely are, and a little bit surprised that he signed a one-year deal. I would have expected him to maybe sign even a three-year deal, let alone a two-year deal. But Silverberg was obviously part of the trade that brought Bobby Ryan to Ottawa. And Silverberg has, to date, been underwhelming. I think we'd all agree that Silverberg was underwhelming this year for the Anaheim Ducks. And at times, they weren't sure how to use him. And I think, you know, with the one-year $850,000 contract, they're saying, well, show me what you got, in a sense. And I think that he's not someone they obviously offered a long-term contract to. But, you know, last year, 10 goals in 52 games, a guy that at times was on the second line, at times was on the bottom lines. And, you know, I'm not sold on Jacob Silverberg. You know, I think he's got a unique skill set, but at times he kind of is far away from the play, not a physical player. He's a pure goal scorer, and he hasn't really shown that elite level. Certainly with the Anaheim Ducks, it'll be tough for him to have a spot in the top six. And so I think he has to prove himself to the Anaheim Ducks. And keep in mind, guys, the Anaheim Ducks have quite a few young players. I know that they lost a few, you know, in the Kessler trade. But, you know, they've got Devontae Smith-Pelly and other players coming up, so
it's going to be tough to compete. You know, can he slot in? Can he compete with those guys and slot in beside Ryan Kessler? Because obviously Perry's playing beside Getzlaff on the right side.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And cheers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
A cheer from all three of us.
Yeah.
Out to Maddie Leibel, yep. Heather Wadsworth, their wedding weekend. You know Maddie, of course, from The Big Show and pretty much every other program on this station at various times. Their wedding tomorrow night, so we're going to send out a joint cheer from all of us, and I'm sure from Timmy and from Remus on the other side of the glass, too, to them on their wedding weekend.
Yep. Have a good wedding, Maddie and Heather.
Yeah, exactly. Have a good wedding, and that's we're looking forward to celebrating with them in the future. That's it for Saturday in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, and Bernstein's Deli. Be sure to check them all out. They make this show possible. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. In case you missed any of the show or our interview with Chris Daniels, King 5 news reporter in Seattle, it will be available for download on iTunes on TSN1290.ca as well. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe and get a sent to your iPod each and every week. For my colleagues, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, Richie, you're away next week. It'll be Ezzy and I in holding down the fort. For producer Tim and producer Remus, we thank you for listening. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.